Hello and welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Karras and I'm here with Amanda Hayes. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Anna. Hello, everyone.
And this week we've been reading Underland by Robert McFarlane. But first, book news, and there isn't much news this week. In fact, a lot of bookish things have been cancelled, of course, with COVID-19, and we, you know, always want to support our authors and bookshops, so we'll still urge everyone to keep buying books.
They're still open.
Yeah, they're luckily still open for business in some form. There's also been an initiative that I thought looked really fun called Save With Stories, which was started by Amy Adams and Jennifer Garner, and it's where celebrities are reading bedtime stories to children on Instagram, and so you can follow them at Save With Stories, and the donations go to save, you can make donations, it's optional, but the donations go to Save the Children and No Kid Hungry, and that supports things like food banks and mobile meal trucks and feeding programs to help children in the US who rely on school meals. So this is particularly for our US listeners. And they say 30 million US children rely on school meals.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah.
What a great initiative this is.
It is really good. And that's obviously because schools have been closed at the moment, and so they're conscious. And there's one in Adelaide locally called Kickstart for Kids that has likewise, you know, has been active and reminding people that their kids who normally benefit from their programs are especially vulnerable at the moment. So it's people like Jake Gyllenhaal, Dolly Parton, Jonathan Van Ness and Lupita Nyong'o reading stories on, well, at bedtime, and you can follow it on Instagram. So that's been a fun.
That is brilliant.
Yeah, it's really lovely. So that is a good initiative to come out of COVID-19 lockdown. And the other thing that I've noticed is recommendations for self-isolation, or as The Guardian had in one of their articles, which was about stylish reads, shelf isolation, which is books about style that you can read in isolation to keep your spirits up. And I think the New York Times was going back to the classics.
Oh, that's a great idea. I like that.
Sometimes people wanting a sort of an escape or a comforting read, going back to the classics can be good for that. And so I thought, Amanda, we could, I'm putting Amanda on the spot here, so we won't do this right now, but we could come up with our, you know, top 10 books to read in isolation.
Great idea. I'd love to.
Yeah. And we can put that up on Instagram and all the other places. So stay tuned for that. And now on to our book of the week, which is Underland by Robert McFarlane. And this was one, I'll let Amanda introduce it, but I picked it because it was on so many lists at the end of the year of not just the official best books, you know, Financial Times or Wall Street Journal or whatever, best books of the year, but the actual critics' favourite books of the year. And so, and that and the absolutely gorgeous cover probably persuaded me to buy it. So Amanda, I'll hand over to you.
First of all, I will say thank you, Anna, for recommending this book. So I'll start by just a little brief outline of Robert McFarlane. So he's a British author. He's a fellow at Emmanuel College in Cambridge, where he teaches literature. And he has been hailed by the Wall Street Journal as the greatest nature writer of this generation. He's written some 9 books, including Mountains of the Mind, The Old Ways and Landmarks. And notably, in 2017, he worked in partnership with an artist called Jackie Morris, and he produced a book for children called The Lost Words. And this book was born because the Oxford Junior Dictionary had dropped nature words like acorn, dandelion and kingfisher in favour of technological terms. And so they created a book with illustrations and a spell-type poem about these lost words. Anyway, that book went absolutely viral and crazy and it sold over 100,000 copies. It's in pretty much all English schools. And it was set to music in the BBC Prom series in London. So I think that's fascinating.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. I think he said that he wrote 800 words for that book, and they're probably the the 800 words of all of his writing that will have the longest life or the most widely read.
And as Anna alluded to, his books have won so many awards, so I won't actually go into all of those, but I will say that Underland won the Wainwright Prize, which is for writings about nature and global conservation. And he has been mentioned, or this book has been mentioned in every list, like the Guardian 100 Best Books of the 21st Century and things like that. It was also serialised on the BBC Radio 4 Book of the Week. Just in other interesting news about Robert McFarlane, he's married to Julia Lovell, and she is a very well-known China scholar and author, and she's written several books as well, but one well-known one is called The Opium War.
Is that her?
Yeah, okay. That's her. And he also says he's an excessive editor and reviser, so every sentence in Underland has been rewritten between 20 and 40 times.
I'm exhausted just thinking about that.
5 to 7 years to write a book, which when you hear that, that all makes sense. So on to the book of the week, Underland. It explores the subterranean world, and it's really a voyage into the planet's past and future. And by that I mean the past is things like ancient burial sites and cave paintings, and the future is the nuclear storage facilities. He visits some very remote underground places, and everything he writes about, he physically goes there. So sometimes the journey to or into these places can be quite grueling. There is one scene that sticks out in my mind when he's underneath Paris in the catacombs, and he's going through a very narrow tunnel that he has to kind of wiggle his way through, and it's so tight that he can't even change the angle of his head. And his
Did you feel claustrophobic reading that?
I'm not claustrophobic, but that, it just makes me squirm to think about that. I mean, that would be terrifying.
Yeah.
Oh, so he does put himself at considerable risk at times. And so what he does is he looks at the relationship between humans and the landscape, and through doing that he comments on the fragility of our planet and the way that we are destroying it. The book is divided into chapters, and each one looks at a different place. So, for example, in Britain he looks at burial sites. He looks at scientists attempting to study dark matter deep underground in Yorkshire. In Europe, he goes underneath Paris into the catacombs. He spends over a day there. They even sleep in there. It's extraordinary. Mm. He goes into caves and looks at submerged rivers in Italy. And then he goes up north to Norway, Greenland and Finland, where he sees icebergs carving. That's when they break off. I have to say I became a bit obsessed with that, and I've been watching YouTube clips of iceberg carvings. He visits a nuclear waste storage facility in Finland, which is, oh, it's kind of fascinating. It's tunneled down underground, and one of the issues with that is trying to warn future generations of the danger contained therein, and how do they do that?
Yeah.
So really interesting. Anna, before I go on, what did you think?
Well, I thought this was fascinating. I probably admired it more than I loved reading it, but having said that, bearing in mind I did go in with the high expectations, but I think it lives up to all of those reviews and it deserves its place on all of those lists. So it wasn't that the blurb didn't match the book so much as I thought I would love it more. So this happened to me with Deep Time Dreaming as well.
See, I loved both of those so much.
I'm glad you did. But I think what happens is I go in thinking that I am really into geology and things like that, and I'm probably not as much as I think that I am. So there's that, but also, you know, I think in these times, as we were just saying with COVID-19, we're looking for perhaps escapist reads and comforting reads, and I did feel claustrophobic down in the tunnels. So it didn't, I'd thought it was probably more nature in a comforting way than it maybe was, which is not a criticism of the book, but also I had just finished, and this is particular to to me. I had just finished The Mirror and the Light, yes, which was a 900-page book. So I had a book hangover. So it probably was also the timing that, yes, I did feel a bit weighed down. But there's a lot about it that I really loved. And one of the things that stood out for me was his curiosity. And this is one of my favourite things in nonfiction authors, is he has this really genuine curiosity, yeah, and thirst for knowledge. And then he's also intrepid in the way, as you say,
incredibly.
He yeah. goes to the, not just goes to the places, but he goes deep, you know, mm-hmm. he really puts himself at risk. And I think he used to be a rock climber.
Yes, he did.
So he's not averse to, there is that adrenaline rush, yeah, that he is obviously something he enjoys to some extent. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was so impressive. And then his enthusiasm to share his knowledge, not just the knowledge of the landscape that he gains as he's crawling and climbing down and traveling through these caves, but also his knowledge of literature, yes, and history, and he sprinkles that throughout the book. So, and I love the way he's, you can tell that he's just has that wonderful enthusiasm to yes. share that with people and communicate.
The other thing he does is he connects with local people often as a guide. And so he paints these very human stories as well, and he obviously connects well with people, and they like him and they open up to him. And there's one chap he comes across, I think it's in Norway, and he's a fisherman. And so Rob goes out on the boat with him and they talk about all that kind of stuff and his life. And then it turns out that this man's also an anti-oil activist, because they were going to search for oil in this beautiful, pristine water. And so he brings in a lot of information into the book, doesn't he, but paints it in a very human way. So you see how drilling for oil went ahead, how it would destroy not only the beautiful landscape but so many people's livelihoods.
Yes, that's right. And, yeah, they all become real characters, yeah, don't they, all these the local people that he meets. So I loved that. And, yeah, there are some very interesting, vivid scenes, like in the mine shaft where he goes to the potash mine. Is how you say it?
Potash.
Yeah. Potash. And they go, Neil drives him along, and they're like black sand dunes almost, the way it's described, but with the heat of the Sahara Desert, and yet they're, you know, miles underground. That was quite scary. And I think he was actually quite scared of the driving, apart from anything else.
Kamikaze style driving in these.
Quite dangerous. And then the Paris catacombs that we've mentioned, and all the different range of people who, and it's sort of fascinating to learn about. There are these groups of people who are sort of fanatical underground. You know, in the, they call them cataphiles, cataphiles,
right. Yes,
in French. Yeah. And there's a whole culture around that, and they meet up, and even though it's partly illegal, they meet up and have parties down there. They have their underground themed music,
and they access forbidden areas in cities, and it's like a cult, isn't it? It's really interesting.
Yeah. Mm. So it was quite fascinating. And then in Slovenia, the history of the caves and the wartime atrocities that had happened there, and initially the Timavo River, which became quite challenging for me in terms of the geology of how this river works, and there's the tidal limestone, and there was so much happening. Yeah. So I thought that there were a lot of really interesting different landscapes that he goes to. And what I think is really rare in Robert McFarlane, and this must be why his books have been so successful, because you don't often get this, is a combination of he has a deep knowledge but also quite a wide-ranging knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, he learns about, he hasn't just focused in on one subject area. He's open to, you get
broad,
the impression, he's open to learning about anything that takes his interest. And he then does the practical exploration. So he actually goes to the places, and he also has the literary sensibility, and the writing skill, and the sort of artistic flair.
So it's the full package, Anna.
I think that, it is a really rare package, isn't it? So I can see why it has resonated with people because if you read a lot of nature books or a lot of landscape books or a lot of geology writing, this would stand out. It's such a different book, isn't it?
I think you don't even have to particularly be a nature lover to enjoy this book.
As he says, it's not quite nature. He said it doesn't sit easily in that genre, and he's comfortable with that because obviously a lot of it's the built-up landscape as well.
And it's what humans are doing as well, like, you know, storing the spent uranium. And have you ever been underground like that, Anna?
I can't think. I don't think so.
Well, I've been in the catacombs several times in Paris and the sewers, which are underground.
Oh, have you?
And also I went caving. I spent 8 hours in a cave in France with a guide. We went through this amazing system with underground 100 galleries, and we didn't visit them all, but it was absolutely extraordinary. So I had some kind of visual image in my mind when I was reading about this.
Yes, well, that's something I would have loved to see this on screen. And I know he can't go back and do it all again with a camera, I don't think. But some of it I really wanted the visual, actually, because he does such a good job in describing it. But it's one thing to read a 2-page description of a cave and another thing just to see. Some of it I really just wanted the visual that would have done it for me rather than all the description. And that artist, the cover is...
Oh, that's right.
It's Stanley Donwood, I think.
From Radiohead, is it?
And he's done work with Radiohead as well. So it is a beautiful work
gorgeous.
Of art. But no, I think for me, I didn't need that much detail. That was probably I would have liked it just a bit lighter. And that's probably more about me and where I
and
was
what
at
you,
when
yeah,
I was
what you
reading
enjoy.
It that, and what I enjoy. Yeah. And I did have that feeling of a little bit claustrophobic.
I have to say, for me, this was a 10 out of 10. I absolutely loved it.
Wow.
I just felt like I was
it.
There in all those places with
him.
Yeah,
you do feel like you're there. And that's the other thing. I didn't want to be underground. I kind of wanted to come up for air because it is so vivid. Yeah. You know, you really do get the sense of being in a tunnel or in the cave and it is fascinating. But then you want to kind of...
But just to think all that's going on below the surface and we don't even know or we can't even see it, you know. There's so much happening. It's great.
It is really interesting. So, no, I very much admired it and I thought it lived up to all of the hype. It was just, for me, probably it's not the sweet spot of nature books that I tend to enjoy as much, or maybe I just wasn't up to that.
Maybe I should have been a geologist because I absolutely just love this stuff.
Oh, that's good. No, I probably was more, it was a bit dense for where I was at when I was reading it, having just finished The Mirror and the Light. I think that's what did me in. What an incredible writer. I'd love to know what he's working on next.
Yes. In fact, just quickly, did you know that he was involved in that film Mountain with the...
No.
That it was a beautiful movie just picturing these gorgeous scenes of mountains, and it was a collaboration between several artists and I don't know in what manner he was involved, but I know he was involved.
So
I think he does a lot of things.
He does a lot of collaborations and he's also an activist for conservation and for getting teenagers engaged with nature and giving them opportunities and he's spoken out about not removing street trees. I think there was an issue with his council about street trees just being removed for no reason. And so he's very conscious of all of those elements that we need to protect. So what a very impressive individual. It makes us, you know, it's always one of those when you read about these people that make you feel an
impressive family because his wife's impressive as well.
That's right. Yeah. So, so that was Underland by Robert McFarlane. And next week I am doing The Mirror and the Light with Annie.
Excellent.
So I can't wait to know what she thinks of it. I won't say any more. And... What's happening then, Amanda?
Are we doing Vernon's Subutex?
Yes, yeah. Yes, we are. Yeah. We're doing Vernon's Subutex 1 and 2 by Virginie Despont. I don't know how you say it in French. We better brush up our French for this one. Set in Paris. So we're moving from the catacombs. I think some of the characters in Vernon's Subutex possibly wouldn't be out of place in the catacombs. They're quite rock and roll. But yes, we're going to be doing those books. So stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go. You can email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Instagram, Litzy, and Twitter at A. Bailey Karras. And Amanda?
And I am on Instagram at Amanda L. Hayes 99.
Fabulous. We'll see you next week. Bye.